Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The best hard rock, the best heavy metal, Talking Metal, a podcast hosted by Mark Striegel and John Astronomy. Available through iTunes and most other podcast providers. Feel the power. Feel the glory. TalkingMetal.com.
Hey, welcome to Talking Metal. Once again, on today's show, we are going to be playing an uncut interview from our Fuse TV show. The people at Fuse were kind enough to let us air this stuff for you guys unedited, or post this stuff, I should say. And it's awesome because you get to hear everything that happened in these interviews. You know, on the TV show, stuff is cut down so tight that it ends up only being a few minutes.
Absolutely. You will hear probably about at least 30 or possibly 40 minute interview that we did with Dave Mustaine of Megadeth.
Yeah, and we want you to tune in Thursday night, which actually might be the day you are downloading this and listening to this, on Fuse, 11 o'clock on the East Coast, 8 o'clock on the West Coast. John, you will be out on the West Coast, so you're going to actually have to tune in at 8 o'clock.
Yes, yeah, I will tune in at 8 p.m. from my hotel in Hollywood, California. Yeah, you guys got to check this show out. Even if you saw it, watch it again. If you haven't seen it, definitely watch it. We have Nikki Sixx of Motley Crue and 6 a.m. We have Dave Mustaine of Megadeth, Serj Tankian, who has a great new album out, the whole band Mondo Generator, led by Nick Oliveri. And then, of course, we jam with Frank and Bumblefoot from Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And if you haven't seen Rob Halford talking about that jam, we have it on our site, TalkingMetal.com. You go to the YouTube section, and I think it's like there's 14 videos posted up there. I think it's right. Like the 14th one. So poke around. I think they call it Fuse Production Reel or something. There's a new MySpace page, actually. If you go to our MySpace page, which is myspace.com/TalkingMetal, Fuse has actually set up a Talking Metal on Fuse MySpace page. So you should definitely check that out and request to be their friend. We don't run that, by the way.
Yeah, it's a really cool new MySpace page, and the address is myspace.com/FuseTalkingMetal. That's FuseTalkingMetal. Definitely be Talking Metal on Fuse's friend on MySpace, as well as be our friend on MySpace.
Yeah, please, kind of please check out the TalkingMetalForums.com, run by John Casimano, a.k.a. Exciter. They are exploding, as usual, posts all over the place. A lot of people talking about the Led Zeppelin reunion, which is actually going to be happening tonight.
It's actually already happening, believe it or not.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like because of the time difference. The first song was Good Times, Bad Times. I believe it's like going on as we speak. Wow. As we're taping this, it's happening.
Wow. And of course, today is Monday in New York City, and it is about 5:30 p.m. So very exciting stuff. People talking about it on the forums. People always online on the forums. People remembering Dime. It's been 3 years, tragically, since we lost one of the greatest heavy metal guitar players ever, Dimebag Darrell.
Yeah, such a sad day for everyone. And
that was December 8th. You're hearing what we're doing today is December 10th here in New York City.
Yeah, the one thing that was cool was that we, despite the fact that December 8th was such a bad day yesterday, which was December 9th, we had such a great day spending some time during the day with Vinnie Paul.
Yeah, Vinnie was in town with Hell Yeah, and it was great to see him and hung out with Bob Zilla, actually, too,
absolutely,
who was, of course, in Damage Plan. So it was great seeing those guys, and, you know, I know that it was definitely it's definitely a tough time of year for them, you know,
right.
And it was really cool for them to, you know, come into New York City and rock it.
Yeah, the
Hell
concert
yeah.
was amazing last night. Hell Yeah played at a place called the Fillmore, which used to be called Irving Plaza. And once again, just thanks to those guys. And I hope we were able to brighten up their day a little bit, you know, by hanging around. And after we all, you know, hung out together, me and Bob Zilla went to a bar, watched the Pittsburgh Steelers game because he's a big fan, as am I. And then we went to a bookstore, picked up a few books, and then headed right over to the Fillmore, where Hell Yeah put on a kick-ass show.
Cool. Cool. People wondering on the forums when the next Talking Metal Live will be. And I got to tell you, I don't know. I don't know. There's so much stuff, guys, going on behind the scenes right now that we can't quite tell you about yet, but we hope to soon. Is that cool?
Yeah.
That I don't even know when we're going to have time to do Talking Metal Live. And sadly, I haven't even really told John this, but there might be a possibility that we're going to have to put Talking Metal Live aside until some time frees up in the schedule. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think we won't officially cancel the show, but we'll just kind of put it on hold for a little bit.
Maybe we could do one more. I know Steve, who runs Bionic, said there is studio time available whenever we want it. So
cool.
Maybe we'll look at the calendar. Maybe not. I don't know. We'll let you guys know for sure. You can always find out about Talking Metal Live, you know, on TalkingMetalLive.com and, of course, on the forums where John and I are posting all the time. So big shout-out to all you posters, Yellowfin, Exciter, Burt Gabriel, Biker Chick from Texas, Premonition, Wargrider, Mayor McCheese, Z-Man, all the regular guys, Sergeant, Politeness, Donnie G, you know, all you guys posting away. Let me take a look here. Give a shout-out to some of the new forum guys who have registered recently. Let's see if I can figure out how to do this ascending order.
I also want to send a special thanks out to Steve and Dan and everybody else at Bionic because those guys are cool. And Dan is sitting right here, which
Dan's helping us out engineering. Thanks,
thanks,
Dan.
No problem.
Some of our recent registers on the forum: Hot Carl, Creator, period, T7, Pilo, Tune Guns, Hawk. Big shout out to all you guys. Thanks for joining us on the
Thank form. You, guys.
Got to grab a phone call. We're going to press pause. Hello?
Your new boss or this guy always been?
I got like, it's weird. I got two bosses, Alex and Joe. I don't even know where I left off.
You were, I think.
All right. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, sorry, just had to take a phone call there. Thanks to all you recent forum posters. We are glad you have joined us. A quick letter.
Thank you, forum posters.
Mark and John, just finished listening to episode 176. It was cool to hear this episode. I just saw Black Tyranny tour here in Albuquerque last week. It was awesome. We missed Sanctity, but we got there in time for Throwdown, which I think you just interviewed. That is true, we did. Anyways, he goes on to talk about Arch Enemy and seeing him before on Gigantor and that they put on an awesome show. And it's hard to believe that a girl as hot as Angela can sound like that and be believable. But she is. I totally agree with that. Angela is hot and she rocks it. And anyways, this guy just is just checking in with us, Rodrigo from Albuquerque, New Mexico. He says in 2 weeks, he has spent a lot of money on CDs. He just picked up the heavy metal box set that we mentioned in a previous podcast, and he said it's awesome. Also, he picked up Megadeth's War Chest, The New Down, Iced Earth, Nightwish, Overkill, Arch Enemy, and he also bought 3 Dream Theater bootlegs. So, anyways, Rodrigo, thanks for checking in with Talking Metal. Oh, and then it says, looking forward to Battlestar Razor and the new season. Yeah, Razor at this point has already aired, and it was awesome. The DVD is out, and I highly recommend you guys pick up that because there's like 13 minutes of unseen footage. And yeah, Razor rocks, Battlestar rocks, and Rodrigo from New Mexico. He rocks too.
Thank you, Rodrigo, man. Totally.
I think that the Down record,
it's one of your favorites of the year.
Yeah, the third Over Down. The yeah, it is so, so good. Highly recommend it. Just so many great songs on that. And saw the video for On March the Saints the other day on TV, and just so good. Such a great song. So many great songs. I have to say my favorite songs on the record, On March the Saints, Nothing in Return, which is very Zeppelin-esque and Sabbath-esque, amazing, and also Digging 3 Suns and 1 Star. But the whole record rocks. It's a rare record because you can put it on rare CD, that showing my age here. You can listen to it from start to finish, which is rare nowadays.
Yeah, I have 2 comments. One.
What are your comments, John?
Okay, my first comment is want to remind all of the Talking Metal listeners that Kirk from Down will also be on the great Talking Metal on Fuse pilot.
11 o'clock. Thursday night, my friends. Fuse.
Thursday night.
8 o'clock for all you
West Coast
California folk and Seattle folk and
Oregon for CD Baby people like Derek Sivers.
Yeah, CD Baby has their own podcast.
I know, I saw that today.
Finish your 2 comments there.
So everybody got to tune in to Talking Metal on Fuse Thursday, December 13th, 11 p.m. East Coast, 8 p.m. West Coast. Unsure in the middle of the country. You got to check that out for yourself. But the second comment is, and you were talking about records and showing your age, I'm going to show my age. My favorite saying of the day is, if you got the time,
we've got the beer. We were just talking about that earlier.
So let's do a toast we're drinking some beer.
I'm going to actually need to get a new beer. I have about 1 swig left here.
And I'm going to have to try to... Very good.
I got the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale happening right here.
I'm drinking Brooklyn Lager. You know what the funniest thing is? On one of our previous podcasts, you were talking about that Sierra Nevada, and the way you said it reminded me of Michael from The Office. Do you ever watch that show, The Office?
Yeah. I didn't like it at first, but my wife loves it, and now I'm so hooked on The Office.
Yeah, me too. I was even thinking of buying all 3 seasons on DVD, because it is freaking hilarious, right?
Yeah. Got to get you into Heroes, man. Yeah. Heroes is a great show, too.
I know. I'll tell you, I've always liked NBC shows for some reason. I'm not just saying that because you're associated. You know,
NBC, of course, owns the Sci-Fi Channel.
Right, absolutely. And I always like that building, 30 Rock, and my favorite show is Law & Order.
Cool.
All of the different Law & Order series.
Very good. So let's get into the interview. We'll lead in here with a little classic Megadeth. This is Peace Sells, But Who's Buying? And we'll end the interview with a little new Megadeth.
Yeah, how about America Stan? I really like that tune.
You got it, man. You got it. Rock it, and a big special thanks to Dave Mustaine, and thank you to Fuse for allowing us to air their interview, unedited, here on Talking Metal Podcast.
Check it out. Time. Got nothing better to do.
the whole time.
Hey, nice being.
Hey, Mark and John here, checking in with you, and we are very honored because we have the great Dave Mustaine with us here today. Dave, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Hello.
We're excited about the War Chest that's coming out. Four CDs, a lot of unreleased stuff, a DVD. Now, did you personally pick all the tracks that are going to be on this?
No, but I was on them.
You were on
them? Obviously. Yeah. The tracks that were all there, they were in the vault of our Capitol, and I don't know everything that's over there. I mean, I remember all of the sessions. I know that there were tons of outtakes and stuff, but in order for me to keep track of those hundreds of takes and stuff, there are 247 documented bootleg live albums of Megadeth right now. So, I mean, for me to go through what the legitimate stuff is on top of that is just ridiculous. You know, I mean, some of the stuff is really raw. It's from the very beginning, and I was just learning how to sing. Because I started actually singing on New Year's Eve in 1983. I'd never sang before that except, you know, what I said when I was doing backup vocals in Metallica.
Right.
You know, so... Running. Yeah, that's a real hard background vocal, isn't it? So, you know, going from that point on, it's just learning about the whole process. It's difficult. You know, if you're not a front man, if you're not a singer and you have to learn how to do stuff like that, you know, the whole circular breathing and stuff.
Right.
Besides, you know, as soon as you go from being a guitar player to a front man too, you've got to learn how to be a cock. So, you know, to be that whole arrogant front man kind of guy.
Was it hard for you back when you first started doing singing? I mean, some of the guitar parts are so complicated, I would say, to also be singing on top of it, it seems like very difficult. As a guitar player myself, you know, was that a hard thing for you to learn and get used
to? I didn't write the songs based on me singing over the top of them.
Right.
So the first record was pretty much being written with guitar playing being predominantly my focus. And when I got to the point where we'd been auditioning singers, some dude came in and he had eyeliner on, and me and Ellison were homeless at the time, and he brought beer, and we figured there's a price of admission, and we drank his beer and then kicked him out, and me and Dave were talking, and just the whole eyeliner concept wasn't cool for us.
Right.
You know, for me, I thought that glam stood for gay LA metal, and I just couldn't handle that whole, you know.
Yeah.
Right. You know, come on. And the bass player that was with my last band before Cliff had been a photographer, and he used to have all these private pictures of taking, that he'd taken of bands that do that whole glam thing. So we were really the antithesis of all that. So seeing this guy come in with eyeliner on, it just really flipped me out. And when I had to switch over to singing, it was like, all right, what am I going to do? Am I going to undo the guitar playing and make it more simple? No, I don't want to do that. So there's kind of like, it's almost like this thing, right? You know, inside of your head where you're doing this, trying to sing and play guitar at the same time.
Well, you know, it's Mark and I have been talking.
Oh, sorry, I forgot you were there.
No, that's all right. Mark and I have actually been doing what we're doing now since back in the 80s, and we actually saw you together April 88 at the Orpheum Theater in Boston, So Far, So Good, So What tour. And
one of the best concerts I ever saw.
Still. And
thanks.
We've just both been fans, and you know, I just wanted to thank you for all this great music. And the thing about this new album, United Abominations, is that every once in a while I get depressed and think that there's like no good music coming out. And there are so many tracks on this record that gave me the excitement. When I used to get albums, I used to put them on and pick like my three or four favorite tracks, and I haven't been able to do that with a lot of bands recently. But this to me sounds like classic Megadeth, and I can pick several tracks off of this that I just think are unbelievable.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'll
so it's like
you,
Prozac then.
Yeah, it is. It helps me, seriously, because I get bummed out, like literally discouraged about the music business and think that, you know, bands I like sound different now, and this record isn't like that, and you guys, I think, just still sound like Megadeth sounded back in the day.
Thanks.
And I think it's amazing. And I stayed up all night last night figuring out United Abomination, just in case we did some jamming today.
Oh, the song?
Yeah.
Shoot, I don't remember how to play that song. Last time I played that was in the studio.
So you guys don't do that one live? But...
No, not yet. You know, we go into the studio to create stuff. We work on the song, we build the song, we turn it into what it is, we record it, and then let it go. And then it's gone forever. And if it's one of the songs that shows up on the record that is dominant enough to, you know, be worthy of being played live, that's when we decide what we're going to play. I mean, I was talking to the boys just a couple days ago about adding a new song. I said we should add Burnt Ice because, I mean, obviously Burnt Ice is about the epidemic of crystal meth in America. The reason I even wrote that song was a purpose for that. It wasn't to do a public service announcement, but it was basically to address the fact that, you know, me being a dad, take that away from everything. Me being a person, having friends that are addicted to that drug, it just blows my mind. So I wanted to put it in a way that young people could hear about the travesty that goes along with that and not be deceived and think that that crap's cool, because it ain't.
You know, you have your daughter, Electra. How is it being a dad?
I have a son, too, Justice. So, you know, there's challenges. Each child is different. And I don't feel like, you know, most parents say, I can't wait till you have kids of your own. You know, because I never heard that stuff. But for me to be able to break a lot of the patterns, you know, people all come up to me and say, like, well, your son's a teenager. How are you when you're 15? How'd you treat your parents? And I say, well, I was living on my own at 15, so that doesn't work. You know, and then, you know, they shut up. Everybody's a child psychologist until they think about the fact, well, I was on my own then, so you can't use the normal, you know, Cleaver family type paradigm to figure out my problems. You know, I'm away most of the time. I love my kids. I can afford to have them out here all the time. But I want them to have a better life than me. I want them to excel in school. I want them to do good in business. I want them to have morals and values and stuff like that. And do I want my daughter coming out here and seeing girls lift up their top? No. Do I mind girls lifting up their top?
No.
No. I don't, but the thing is like, you know, I'm also trying to be a good example. And in rock and roll, you got to kind of almost be a horse's ass to be taken serious, you know. I look really different from a lot of people because I'm not pierced. I don't have any tattoos. And to me, I'm not a circus pony. When my job as a musician is over, I can go off into retirement without having a sinking battleship across my chest. You know, and some of the things that you think are part of the music business aren't. They're just not. Who says you have to be tattooed to be cool? Don't have anything against body art. It's all over our website. I love seeing somebody who has Megadeth tattoos on. Unfortunately, James McDonough, the last bass player we had, he was a temporary guy. He goes, man, I think I'm going to go get myself a tattoo. Gets a big Megadeth tattoo on the back of his leg and got fired a couple months later. I was like... Get tall socks.
Oh, that's funny. Speaking of bass players, I know James Lomenzo is with you now, and I've known about James and met him back many years ago in the 80s, and how's it working with him, and how did you know him from the, you know, all the other bass players?
Oh, he was the enemy. If I would have known he was in White Lion, right. I would have said, forget it. You know, but he was in Zach's band, and right. I respect Zach, and I thought, you know, hey, he can't be a hack. In fact, he was... recommended to me by the guy that was the A&R guy over at ESP Guitars, which...
You're right.
but he going to the office where our manager was, and I said, okay, show me what you can do. Picks up his bass, it's like, okay, he can play.
Cool.
Definitely better than McDonough or Ellison was, and I was like, this is a player.
Cool.
But he had a beard down to here, and I was thinking, oh... How am I going to deal with that? And I said, what about the beard? He goes, it's part of the prop for being a BLS. He says it'll be gone tomorrow. And I went, really? So he showed up and he was all clean shaved.
Wow.
And I was so excited because he's dedicated. He's a great singer. He's a great player. He is capable of being a leader. He's a front man in his own right. You know, last night, his moments, when he has his moments, everybody gets featured to a degree in a band if you're a fair band. At his moments, he's a commander. I remember being in a club in Tokyo. Frankie Bello was right here, and I can't remember who was sitting there, so you don't matter right now. But I'm just kidding. And Scott Ian was there, and Charlie was over there, and Frankie was telling me some stuff. And James was right here, that's right. And he was just conducting court. And I'm watching all the guys in Anthrax go...
Just
I'm thinking,
to
they don't even listen to me like that,
yeah, right.
You know? And it's just, that moment, it was Osaka, Japan, it was one of those moments where you really become proud of one of your band members because you know that other people respect them too. Because there's been a lot of questioning the decisions that I've had to make in my band, and frankly, it's not that hard to figure out. If you have one vision, you go in one direction, there's no problems. If someone's trying to steer the vehicle this way, well, there's a door, right? Get out. We're going this way. And we've always had a common vision. Right now, the vision that we all have, the Drovers eat, breathe, live metal. I mean, they listen to stuff that's such garbage, that's metal stuff. It's like, you know, I would, if you listen to their iPods and stuff, if you looked inside there, it's just endless bands about disemboweling virgins and stuff over from Norway and yeah, stuff like that, right? So I don't get that. I'm not a gastrointestinal wannabe surgeon, so, you know, chopping up virgins and that's in my bag, you know what I mean? But they can play. So I can go up to them and say, hey, you know what, let's do this song. Okay, let's do it tonight. Wait, let's, you know, because
they
want to do it right then and there, because, you know, they know the songs, they know the entire catalog of all of the back music.
That's amazing.
I'm getting harassed by these guys to add two new songs in right now. We were going to add Ashes in Your Mouth into the set and Scald Me at the Skin, which is a great classic from way back in the day.
It's funny that you have to go back and learn your tunes, because of the way you said you record them and then you kind of put them aside.
Well, there's over 100 songs.
Yeah. Right.
You know.
Now, when you were doing remastering, you also, like on some of the records, you even did some re-recording of parts.
Right?
Like on So Far, So Good, So What?
Stuff disappeared.
And did you have to relearn stuff? Or what do you mean it disappeared?
The actual master tapes? Yeah, sometimes tracks, they will, because it's, you know, this celluloid and you've got material that sticks to one side and the other side is clean, sometimes that stuff will degenerate and parts will be lost or it will be unlistenable to it. In other words, it's corrupted. Now, they didn't really call tape corrupted back then. They would just say it's fucked up.
Right.
You know what I mean? And when you lost something, you lost something. Mm-hmm. So when the tapes came back from the vault, they had to put them into an oven at a set temperature and heat them up so that everything would release, because it's all this celluloid. Over time, gravity, it destroys the tape.
All right.
So when the tapes came back to us after being baked, you've got to also take into consideration it's plastic, it's in an oven. What happens if something happens? So there were vocal tracks that disappeared. There was a bass track, a teeny little part that just got dissolved, for lack of a better word. And I kept it as the integrity of the record as much as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. There were some things that's in the mix that were on the original record that were supposed to be on the original record. But when you collaborate with somebody, unless I have absolutely no respect for you, if I'm collaborating with you, I'm going to listen to your ideas, right?
Sure.
If not, I'm paying you to just sit there. Why would I pay you to sit there?
Right.
Unless you're like a mail order bride or something. But the thing with collaborating, sometimes the decision doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in good partnership and being a good, you know, good leader, you've got to take those risks. And we've made some decisions with some of the records, like with Euthanasia, the record was slowed down. Max Norman, who had mixed Rust in Peace, and this is my thinking.
Yeah.
He mixes Rust in Peace. Rust in Peace is a smash. He helps me. I produce. He's kind of like the co-producer for Countdown to Extinction. It's number two, so I'm going, wow, this is really easy to do the math.
Yeah.
The more control I give him, the more successful we've been becoming. Right. So after Countdown, I figured, you know what, Max, why don't you take the reins and I'll kind of like be the co-producer. So we kind of did this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see in the video, Evolver, Max is cross-eyed, so he's going, trying to count to a metronome, right?
Right.
To make all the songs 120 beats per minute.
Wow.
And he said that that's the success to singles. They have to be 120 beats per minute. So I'm thinking, you mean if I would have slowed Black Friday down to 120 beats per minute, I'd hear it on KLOS?
Yeah.
in California or something. But Max was a great guy to work with. I picked him because of his work with Ozzy.
Right, did Diary and Blizzard, sure. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Now you mentioned, go ahead.
I was going to talk about something. I'm not going to name a company that you previously named, but you're with Dean Guitars now.
Mm-hmm.
And your new signature model is...
Have you played
right?
one?
I haven't played it yet, but I watched the video of you on the Dean website doing the interview, and I've always been fans of these, just because I had a Jackson back in, like, it's like an early 80s, like, Randy Rhoads model, and I just got used to the feel of these, and even sitting and playing these. And I know that you said that you started because of Michael Schenker with these. But tell us about the Dean. I know you're even getting into like flame tops and stuff like that, whereas in the past you had said that you thought that guitars that had like wooden tops look like you're playing a coffee table.
That was Marty Friedman's quote.
Oh, that was? Okay.
Actually, if you look in the Evolver video, again, Ellison quoting Friedman too there, because you know they look at exotic wood and they think that you know they've got their. It doesn't really seem like you know something that's really pretty is metal. I mean, to me, if the guitar sounds great, it sounds great, and I have no idea what's even in the case, the one that I brought today. I know that there's a graphic with some wings on it that's really cool, and my favorite one is black, solid black.
Just a black one, right?
That's it.
Because I know most of your guitars were either black or silver or white.
I'm really old school. I don't really like the white ones because blood shows up on a little bit if I cut my fingers when I'm playing, and then that starts to look stupid, like I want to be, you know, Sid Vicious kind of thing.
Right.
You know, black's good for me because it doesn't distract from what I'm doing, and you can really see the fingers flailing on there, too.
The thing is, you're using the same amp setup and all the same other gear, but you said that you can even hear your solos better.
On that guitar, yeah, you can. It's
weird. What is it, though?
I don't know. You know, for you to say that one ruler is any different from another ruler is the same thing, one hammer is different from another, who the hell knows? It's just there's a balance thing there, you know? And I used to be able to go pick up a guitar from my first company that I endorsed, and then I'd pick up another one, and it wasn't the same.
Right.
And then I would go pick up another one, and the electronics would be backwards. And then I'd go another place, and the neck would be fatter. These guitars, everyone they've sent me, now that we've concluded what the prototype was supposed to be, it's like they're being spit out of a machine that's the same exact guitar every time. And I was up in Canada on the Heaven and Hell tour doing a solo to Sleepwalker, which is a kind of a difficult solo to me, because you have to, you're fretting here and you're pulling off with these fingers and you're switching back and forth. And because I have to bar and pull off at the same time and do all that stuff, possibility sometimes there's a harmonic that goes on, or there's some microphonic noise going on with the rest of the strings.
Right.
And I'm listening to it, and I'm thinking, God, my guitar sounds kind of plinky, because, you know, I was hearing all the notes, and then I went to sustain, and the note was totally clean, and I was like, wow.
Wow.
That really had cleaned up there. And from that point on, I stopped trying to figure out what it was, because I figured if I got too involved in it, it would sound bad again, so...
Where is Dean out of? Where do they make him? Is it Texas? Or is it LA?
Dean, the guy that's the namesake, Dean Zielinski, is out of Chicago. The owner of the company is out of Florida. And the factory's down in Florida. And my signature models are American made.
Cool.
And the drovers have been down there. I haven't. I'm planning on going down there when we hit Florida this trek.
Now, are they going to possibly do like a lower price model too?
Yes, they are. Yeah. They've got entry model guitars, they've got semi-professional guitar player models, and they've got professional guitar player models, and then they have the deluxe versions for those of us who are professionals. And you know, you kind of figure, well, how much more can a guitar get deluxe than the standard version that I have as my signature? Well, not much. So that in order for them to make the guitar any better, because it plays so well, they have to do cosmetic stuff to it. And I have an acoustic that they gave me that is just the most ridiculous-looking thing in the world. It's got tortoiseshell, abalone, perloid, wood inlay.
Wow.
All of this crazy stuff and jade tuners and stuff. And I'm looking at this, and it's like, it almost looks like a Chinese coffee table.
Right.
Mm.
No, with all the jade and, like...
Yeah. Like you should turn it over and read a story. The Ming Dynasty or something in there.
Now, is that just an acoustic they made specifically for you?
No. Well, we're talking about doing an acoustic guitar, and they sent this over to me to show me what they're capable of doing. And
wow.
I said, I loved it. I called up the people at Ovation, who are a great company, and stood by me, and I said, I'm going to be moving on. And that's where we're at right now. I'm going to be making a guitar with them. But it's got to be right. Everything that I've ever done, I've tried not to rush. You know, there's only one right way to do anything. And for me, I don't respond well to being rushed.
Is Dean still involved at all?
Zielinski? Yeah, he is.
Oh, okay, because I know he sold the company.
And then Elliot bought it, and then he brought Dean back in and just totally revamped the company. After Darryl had passed away, they needed to kind of reevaluate things, and they wanted another marquee player. So they contacted me, and I was like, flattered that you compare me with Darryl, and I was excited to go there. I didn't like the V head,
right?
So I asked if they would change the headstock for me, and they did.
Which is cool.
Yeah, it's like getting Coke to change their stripe. You know
right.
what I mean? But I told them that I would work harder for them than anybody they've ever had before, not knowing what I was saying, but, you know. And now I'm flying at like 3 a.m. from India to Germany to go do the German Stein Nam show, whatever it is.
Right.
I'm playing in Cuba. I think we're supposed to play one night in like India, and then I'm supposed to fly to that show the next day. So
will we be able to do Winter Nam in L.A. this year?
Yeah, but I, you know what? I went to the Summer Nam when it was in Nashville because I had friends there. Boring.
Oh, really? I've been to guitar shows, but I haven't yet been to a Nam show.
Mm-hmm. Well, the NAMM show's okay. It's kind of like a circus, though. You know, there's a public day where everybody gets to come, and then there's the poser day where everybody doesn't come from the public. You know, and everybody else that's there, they're just, you know. You kind of see where all the washed-up rockers go. They go work for music stores and, you know, stuff like that. And I feel sorry for them because they've all got such great hearts. They're excited to meet you, and they want to hang out and say, hey, man, I was in a band once. I had long hair once. You're probably skinny too once, right?
Let's do like two more questions, Mark.
Okay. For it, Mark. Dave, I wanted to go back post 9/11, New York City. Most bands were canceling their shows. John and I are New Yorkers, and I just remember you guys coming into town. I think it was probably like October, maybe even late September. You did the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a amazing moment for the people that you came in here and you ended the show bringing out the V with the American flag, doing Holy Wars. Can you share some memories about coming into New York City to do that show?
All I remember is the same thing that you felt at that time. We were all proud of our country. We were all united and we were all ready to stand shoulder to shoulder and fight. We ain't like that today. We've forgotten. You know, it's sad, the nationalism here in our country. It's pathetic. Nobody really wants to stand up for what freedom and liberty we have. And I wasn't going to let anybody scare me. When we canceled the show in Seattle on September 11th, it was out of good taste. When we played the next night in Canada, it was because I'm not going to let them scare me. I mean, if they kill me, you know, it's over. I played Tel Aviv. I played Dubai. You know, I'm an international citizen. I play around the world. I've never really gone out and finger-pointed about any particular administration other than trying to get people themselves to recognize the power that they hold themselves. When I got involved in the Democratic National Convention in 92, I mean, I was there I representing us, the disenfranchised youth of America, the unofficial elected official. Dave Mustaine's here. Right. You know, he's going to ask the questions. I went all the way to the White House. I represented us. There's not a lot of people that want to do that for us. I'm very well taken care of, and I think that I owe that to our fans, not to be intimidated. And when I get up on stage, sometimes it's just fun. Sometimes I'm making a really big statement. That night was a really big statement. Your police force had taken me over to Ground Zero, and there was something very chilling about being there because we went through a lot of the barricades, very deep into Ground Zero. I was on the opposite side.
Was it still smoking at that time? Yeah.
It was dreadful. And you know, I had a lot of experience as a kid playing around with Satanism and witchcraft and experiencing the occult and feeling darkness.
Mm-hmm.
That felt really weird when I went there. I'm sure there were a lot of paranormals that were, you know, that would explain because of all the death that was there,
yeah,
that
sure.
There was probably a lot of souls there that were really just... You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went back on stage that night, I mean, how could you not love this city? How could you not want to fight for her? Even though I'm a Californian, you know, I lived here for a little while.
Right.
You know, very short period of time.
Yeah. What about Gigantor? Last time I saw you play was down in PNC, and
Jersey.
It was awesome. Arch Enemy, Lamb of God, Megadeth. We had an awesome time at that show. I know you're doing some stuff in Australia, but can we expect Gigantor back in the States maybe in 2008 at some point? Or
yes.
And are you picking bands for that now? Or
almost done.
Really?
Cool.
Very cool. Can't share any with us at this point?
I can.
When is this going to air?
He's
November. When?
November.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gigantor next year will be Megadeth, Children of Bottom, In Flames, Job for a Cowboy, and we're looking for another band right now.
Wow.
So.
There you go. Exclusive right here. Cool. Well, John, you have anything else?
Just wanted to say thanks, Dave, for coming down. And I was just wondering if I could, after this is done, check out your guitar that you brought.
Go ahead.
Cool.
Yeah.
I thought you said two more questions.
She did say two more questions.
Are you still friendly with Alice Cooper?
He's my godfather.
Oh wow. How's he doing?
He's a lovely man.
I'm trying to listen to his radio show. But I don't think they have it here in New York.
It's a little namby-pamby for me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I love him. And I think that he does a really good conservative Republican kind of Christian metal show.
Yeah.
You know, he's a Christian too, but not a Republican, right?
But I wanted to ask you about that, because a lot of, I mean, the message boards seem to debate your political stance back and forth.
Well,
and,
I voted for Clinton, I voted for Bush. The reason I voted for Bush was because I interviewed Kerry when we did the National Democratic Convention thing, and he dissed me hard, and I was there with MTV, big sticker on the camera, big whatever the thing you call it on the microphone. He just plain flat out dissed the station and what we represented, and I knew there was something inside me that didn't feel right.
Right.
And it's on tape, so
thanks.
You know, call up MTV and ask them to show you what their archives are. So,
you know what I like? I love this little bevel here. Mm-hmm. Really amazing. These are signature pickups too.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. This is cool. Can I check it out for a second?
Don't touch it.
Oh, okay.
Don't even look at it.
So I don't know if you want to, we've been watching like on the internet, like fun little like tutorial, this is how you play this song. If you want to do something like that for one of the...
How about you have him show me my songs and I'll tell you if he's doing it right.
Last night he was up all night figuring out the song.
Okay, we'll see.
Here, I'll give you this one. All right,
I'm watching.
Yeah, okay, cool.
All right, so if you want to just kind of set this up, John, and say, you know, what you did last night, and this is United Abominations, and you can just respond, see if he's doing the right thing.
God, what does that song even sound like?
John.
So, do you want me in the shot, or should
I? Okay. Dave, I can play this, but I know in front of you I'm not going to play it, right? Okay, let me do it again. That part's crazy. Are you playing a harmony or that?
I think so. I have to figure it out again. Let me see. How does that song go? Okay. Ugh, you gotta get some different pitch. You're going the octave, right?
That's what I was doing.
That's it. Which chord are you asking about there?
The that right there, right.
Yeah. See what I do with the chords, like if I there's a major, right?
Right.
Now if you wanna, instead of having to tune your guitar down all the way, you just move it over one. It's even lower. You move it over one more, it's even lower. Right? So this chord. That's not going. Because that chord right there.
Okay.
Yes, this one.
I thought you were
really
doing those.
Low.
Right.
Yeah.
It sounds cool.
Sorry, I'm not retarded. I'm just trying to learn a song again. So.
Well, there's another thing that I just couldn't do. Thanks. And it was that beginning, because I know it's like a... But I don't think that's what you're doing. I think you're going. But
that's it, yeah.
But
that's
now,
what
how
it sounds
are you
like.
Doing it with the G? I mean, like how? I can do that, but then, and I can go. Yeah, but like.
Wait, let's hear it.
Okay. Oh, just doing it open.
I mean, it makes the most sense to me. I'd have to play it again to figure out what I did.
But you know,
why don't we show you something I know?
What's your favorite Megadeth song, you guys?
Huh?
Mine. You know what song is awesome? You played this first time I saw Megadeth, which was in Boston in '88. Hook and Mouth. Such a great song.
Okay.
I just.
All right,
I remember when you guys did the PMRC rant. And,
okay, now I sit here and then play the bass.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you. Yeah.
Right? And then.
Yeah. Wow. I just heard on, believe it or not, Sirius Radio is playing. 502, like a couple weeks ago.
Better than Hawaii 50, right?
Yeah. I thought that was kind of an obscure thing for them to play.
Yeah, it is.
It was awesome.
Because, you know, they don't call it a 502 in California anymore, so now I look like I'm talking about somebody's address. You know what it is, right?
No. What's it?
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a drunk driving.
Well, 502 I knew was a drunk driving. I didn't know what they
you
call it now.
You just told me you said you didn't know.
Oh, I thought you meant, do you know what they call it now?
Well, neither do I.
Well, 502, yeah. 187, I think we know because
Yeah, I think they just got lazy and did DUI.
DUI.
Did I? Did you? Did you I?
Right. I've never, no.
Do you I?
Oh, is there anything else you wanted to do with
the
guitar?
I mean,
yeah,
I'll talk about it. Yeah, give me this. I think what you'll notice here that's really neat about, you know, obviously you pointed out these bevels and stuff here, but we really looked at a lot of the construction, the wood length and the grain of the wood is really tight, so it'll sustain a lot better. You can't tell because it's black, but...
What is this wood? Is it mahogany, or is it alder?
It's supposed to be mahogany.
Right.
For all I know, it could be balsa wood. But it's got the signature Dave Mustaine live wire pickups in it. It's got Tone Pro bridge. We've got all Tone Pro knobs and everything. I use GHS signature progressive strings, and on the back here, you'll see this is definitely a prototype because it's still handwritten.
Wow.
And these are Grover tuners with Jim Dunlop strap locks on the back because I wiggle around on stage a little bit and the strap falls off. And it's really kind of hard to look cool when the guitars are on your feet.
That's cool how the strap lock is actually like it's like in the guitar because I thought I guess I don't have Dunlop.
No, you don't.
Yeah, what is this?
You don't have anything like mine.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I know, that's not, but I never saw these kind of strap locks before.
Well, because I had them embedded.
That's my thing. Embedded. That's cool.
Most guitar players will have it sticking up.
Right.
I don't know. I guess they like that feeling of having a knob rubbing against their belly.
That's cool.
Just terrible.
And there's a battery in there, right? You have active pickups, right?
Yeah. Well, unless that's a compartment for hiding drugs. Oh, it's a battery. Yep.
Cool. And what is this, an M&E fingerboard? I mean, it's really black, so that's what I thought it could be, ebony.
None black. Mini fret wire. I don't like the big fret wire.
Oh, cool.
You know, because my tabs on the ends of my fingers aren't very small, so when I get up here in these top frets, trying to get into those frets right there.
They're kind of flat, too, which I like.
The frets or my fingers?
No, the frets.
they've been rubbed down a little bit, but a lot of that's wear on them, too. You know, I really like the guitar to have as much space on the fret for landing as possible because I don't look when I'm playing because I have to look at people so that they don't say, oh, he never looks at me when he sings. So a lot of times I'll look away. And I need to really be able to land in there. Plus, you know, when you get really high fret wire, you stand the chance of having more material there for a guitar tech to have to struggle with, or something you can do to the guitar where you get a burr on it and the string will hook on it.
Right. I've had that happen where this E string is like stuck under the fret. Now, you said a progressive, your signature strings, is it like a 10 here or a 9?
This is a 10, that's a 52.
Wow.
It's a really, really heavy gauge because I think it sounds better. And, you know, most wimpy guitar players will have 8s on here because they can't stretch the strings or something like that. Eat your spinach. I think that they should get stronger strings because it just has so much more material in order for the string to vibrate over the poles. And on top of the fact of that, the tinsel, which is a fancy word for how strong the metal is, because this is a progressive alloy, what happens is the core on this string, the size of a stronger alloy, they're able to get more tone out of it because to have that gauge, what we're playing with inside is a much better string. So I can beat this thing and it won't break as easily as a normal string will. Plus the tonality of these strings are better. We went through a couple different sets until I found exactly what I wanted. But I mean, basically with this guitar, there's not really much more that you would want to do with a guitar unless you were a guitar player that used active in and out of phase switching on your guitar. And I think if you get to that point where you're splitting coils on your pickup and you're doing stuff like that, you're obviously not in a band because real musicians don't use those.
Cool. Have you heard any covers of like Megadeth songs that like you really liked or ones you really hated? And would you give any? Can you give any sort of advice to people out there who are covering Megadeth songs? What not to do?
Arch Enemy.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people that have done it. Arch Enemy was a compliment. We had a band called the Tiger Tails from England do a cover of Peace Sells, and I heard it and my ass grew together. I was so embarrassed. It was. What are you going to do with that? These guys, they didn't look like they were, you know, exactly what they sound. Tiger Tails, right? Now right, imagine like, them running around on stage like that singing one of my songs. They sucked all the cool right out of that song. And somebody had sent it to me, and I thought it was a really, really bad joke. There's a lot of tribute records out there. And some of the bands, you know, they do really good. I like when people take creative license to do what they want. You know, maybe change the song a little bit. Because if you're going to do a cover like the way we usually approach it, we try and either do it the same way and do it better, or we try and modify the song a little bit and do it our own way. Like with These Boots Are Made for Walking, when we did that by Lee Hazelwood, we had that song out for almost 12 years after I had rearranged everything, and the guy sends me a letter saying, I've changed the lyrics to something vile and offensive. Well, what's vile and offensive is that he cashed the check for 12 years before he complained.
Yeah. Right.
But you know what? It's like, funny thing, when we re-released the record, we took it off, and then we did the master, and I put every word he had in there that was his word, I put an asterisk in it. Unfortunately, being very tacky, when he died, I wrote a letter, and I said, rest in asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. So.
You know, we were talking about politics earlier. I mean, you've always kind of followed politics. Any thoughts on the 2008 candidates for president?
Dual citizenship?
Dual citizenship.
Like you're going to another country?
Yeah. No. You know what? The thing is, I think people have missed the point of the political process. There are much better people that are capable of leading our country than the people are running. Mm-hmm. You got to ask somebody, why are they going to this extent to lead the country? Why don't we as the people pick the right person? Why do we have all these other people, you know, that were relentlessly digging in their closets to find out who's queer, who's smoked crack, who's a lesbian?
Right.
You know, why do we care about that? Why can't we go back to the day where dudes had swords and rode horses and, you know, the right guy led?
Yeah.
I personally think that you've got people who can lead huge corporations. America's like a corporation.
Absolutely.
You know, the military's like a corporation, you know. I don't know. I think it's just going to be the same stuff. It's just going to continue to go on like it is. And the lyrics in United Abominations talks a lot about what my feelings are. I think the United States is losing its grip as a world power. Mm-hmm. We used to be the good world power. Now we're not looked at like that. As an international traveler, you know, the anti-American sentiment that I see, because I blend into the woodwork real easy. I can fake an accent when I go other places. Oh, yeah. And if someone go, you fucking American, I'll say,
I'm Canadian, eh? You know, and get away with it like that, because I got two Canadians in the band. I'll just steal their passport real quick. But anyways, you know, it's sad, because we were looked at for a long time as liberators and defenders of, you know, the weak, and it doesn't really look like that right now. We need a president that's going to get us back on track, and it's going to make, you know, us proud to be American again. I mean, I'm proud to be an American, but I see a lot of other people, you know, that just don't like us. And to our men and women in uniform, thank you. I'm not one of those pussy musicians that'll say I don't support our military.
Right.
You know, I think the war should be done. If I was leading, it would have been boom.
Right.
And then we would have had a ticker tape parade a couple days later, and, you know, it would have been over by now. But that's just me.
All right, I think we got to wrap it up.
Oh, okay.
So, can I just have you do a Hey, I'm David Stane, you're watching Talking Metal promo?
Sure.
You want to do it with the guitar? Into camera. If you
want to
do a riff or something, that's cool.
Do a riff. All right, let's see if I remember the circus song. How's that?
That's great.
Is it on? Oh, I'm not going to play. I'm just going to sit here. Hi, I'm Dave Mustaine from Megadeth, and you are watching Talking Metal here with me and my friends.
Recruiting the ill-fated for the war. Of uneducated bankrupt souls with a lust for revenge, answering the call from New York, Qatar to Califarabia. Desperation provides fertile ground for religious extremism, this glorious brainwashing where prejudice lies like a crouching tiger, tormenting peasants till they erect an army under everyone's nose. In the end, propaganda destroys their DNA. God help them. Ignore the focus groups. You must send in the massage.